Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Welcome again, our listeners, to the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. We are delighted that you could join us today, and we have with us today as well Rogier Chade, the master from Europe that has been very kindly assisting me with this one of our two shows with BBS. We also have a show called Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension, where we discuss in great detail the concepts needed to understand the transfiguration that takes place during our ascension. But right now, if you've just joined us, you have joined us for the mystical world we live in. And Rogier has compiled questions of his own and also of our listeners. We are always happy when you join our ever-growing email list, and you do it online at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Welcome. And Rogier, thank you again for helping us, and please feel free to continue whenever you're ready.
Okay, you're welcome. The first question is, why, when probably no one can understand them, do you include the writings of those mystical languages in your books?
Oh, you know, nobody's ever asked me that one. There are actually several reasons for that, and it goes as follows. Number one, if you take a look at the Arupa Ferina book, Arupa Ferina book was written in 1 week. It's the Arupa Ferina Book of Fairy Magic. I was knee-deep in writing The Ring of Truth, having been instructed to do so, to reveal the changing laws of existence by the Mother Goddess of all life, when in the middle of it, I was contacted by a group of fairies and told that for 1 week only, from November the 13th, 2006, I was permitted to take their photos, to photograph interdimensionally. They would allow me to go through their realms, through their homes, and to receive their magic and their languages. Now, during that time, a most unprecedented event happened, in which we had groups of fairies from several star systems return home. Now, how they got from Earth to those star systems, we give in the book of the unicorns, which we call The Gift of the Unicorns, and it gives in the second half from the history keepers of the cosmos the history of the Earth and her location at different times of her existence. So during those times, fairies migrated from Earth to others. So we have languages of the Earth fairies from Lyra, who kept the Earth fairies' language. We have got the Lyra fairies, which is an older migration, if you will. The magic of the fairies from Venus. We have the languages of the fairies from the Pleiades, and the fairies from Andromeda and Arcturus. Each of them write differently. There's different written languages. And interestingly enough, I might just add, since we're discussing languages, the fairies of Earth and the fairies that we call the Earth fairies from Lyra, and the star system, those fairies, if you write their language, which we give in detail, and I'll explain why, but it's similar in style to the elfin language. It's absolutely not exactly the same, but it's similar in style to the elfin language of the Earth elves that is stacked line upon line upon line on top of each other. If you were to stack the elf language in about five high, it would look very similar to the fairies' language. Now, when they each came, they each had a different nationality. They came from Lyra or from the Pleiades, etc. Each of them very, very proud of their heritage, that which made them them. And so it was important for me to honor that. They were proud of their languages. Eons and eons old, we have no language on earth currently spoken in the modern languages that can even come close to the age of these languages. They are proud of them. So they have honored us by sharing their magic, all but the Arcturian fairies, because the Arcturian fairies said that if they have a policy or a law amongst them that if they give something, they have to give all. So they are happy to give their magic, but they want their own book. And I only have so many hours in the day, so we haven't gotten there yet. But the magic that the others gave, I wanted to give in return the respect to honor their language. So I gave the written language and then the verbal language, and then the translation was made exactly the way they speak. So it sounds a little childlike. But as you can see, it's like, you know, it's a little bit like an archaeological dig to suddenly encounter something that left the earth eons of life ago before we had any idea that history existed. You know, you want to preserve every iota of it just the way it is. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And you know, the other thing, too, that I wanted to do, Rogier, is that so many light workers are starting to hear languages in their head. And in my classes, that happens invariably that they either write or speak them. But because I can translate it for them, and I can also show them, by the way, this master in Ireland wrote this piece, it's the same, or the one in Toronto or Alaska or somebody somewhere in Holland wrote this, then they can contrast and compare. So it gives them a frame of reference. Aha! I've heard these words somewhere before, and as they read it more and more, it triggers their ability to first just speak it, and then usually the most secondary step to it is that they start to understand it. And then my goal has been reached, which is communication between the human kingdom and these hidden realms. So that's, in a nutshell, will explain it.
But does that also explain why you would put the mother languages in your books?
Aha, now the mother languages, and there's a book to come that has the father languages in it. That is something else, because it's the highest form of pure white magic. For instance, if an angel heals a sick child, it's done through white magic. Well, mother's language to humankind, and there's several languages that we give. In the Unicorn book, I believe, there's snippets of it on the back page of Arupa Sirina. Mother gave a message about their magic. So we've got a lot of it in Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. We've got several languages written and spoken, plus we have 100 incantations she gave for the masters of Ireland. If you speak in the mother's language, and really your pronunciation doesn't even have to be perfect, but if you speak in it, whatever you say becomes so. And so, you know, her language is, actually affects reality profoundly. The others might affect your ability to expand, but mother's languages and father's would actually, you know, yourself, because you speak the father's language, I speak the mother's languages. They affect reality. It's the way to change that which is around you to perfection without any ability to misuse it.
Okay, and for information purposes, there are, you know, for our listeners, there are multiple languages of the mother, right?
That is correct.
And how does that work?
Well, they were used during different cycles of the fall. And the other thing that has happened is that they actually were used to create changes in ascension and descension. For example, there's a language of mothers that was spoken during descension. Then, one day, and this is according to the history given by the history keepers of the cosmos, to me, which I took down in dictation as the second part of the gift of the unicorns. They say that one day Mother spoke another language, and in that instant, the descension cycles changed to ascension. That language, which is still within the fall but part of the ascension, for instance, has got R's in it, it's got F in it, and so forth. But there is a language that exists, really pure, pristine. Of course, they all are, but it has no R's in it. It seldom uses the L. It has no W's in it. It has no Z or Z in it, and so forth. It's a whole different language. And the feeling of it is very feminine. And sometimes when it's spoken in prayer, then people would say to me, it sounds like Native American languages. Well, actually, it sounds like the Lemurian language, which is the motherland's language, and many of the Native American tribes came from there. But they formulated their language as much as they could after the language of the mother.
All right.
In Lemuria, right?
Mm-hmm. But what's the, because that's interesting, if you, because the father's language does have a lot of R's in it, which is interesting. I never really...
Well, I must tell you, I have never, because I, as you know, I speak multiple languages of the kingdoms. I've, for so many years, worked between realms on Mother's behalf that she made it necessary to turn my third eye into what we call a Urim and Thummim. And you can look it up in a concordance of the Bible. It's mentioned a lot in the first five books, but it's a seer stone. And so, you know, if I see a language or I hear a language, I can translate it. And so I've never, ever heard anything like the father's language.
It's terribly
unique. And maybe, you know, one day when you're ready, you can give us the father's language, a little snippet of it in the incantations of the dove, but I'll let you do that when you think it's time.
Okay, but maybe it's nice for you to just say something in one of the languages and see what we get.
I'm delighted to. Belishvi kraunak suretvi klu husep strava. From my hand to yours, this gift of magic is given. Herevish ulehvi strehup sesva uklehve straunuspa ereknut. The gift of magic that is incorruptible and pure in its intent. Teleshbichraba ukles verechnus praureshbe klauva. It is time for my children to come home. It is time for the homecoming. Bere uruch natra, eresh briechne, staubach, belesh uvrichva straunuspa, erekvi strauna. I give you this day the gift of my presence in your heart. Take time for the sacred meeting to take place. And that is the language that was spoken during the ascensions. So the language that was spoken above the descension ascension cycles is as follows. As humankind have slumbered, all the cosmos knows that great and magnificent things have taken place during the ascension. A great deed is about to take place, changing life yet again. Will you hear it told in the media of your existence? Ishbahuch navahye kauch navoyeveta Nuhpoyi Anashvasa. They perpetuate the hype when all is well that it is not so.
All right. I'm just wondering if I should place that question here, because you actually, in terms of promoting hype, you were mentioning the other day when you were in one of the big local supermarkets, the nausea that you experienced, and how a week before that you had experienced this as well. And I wonder if you wanted to elaborate what that was about.
The fear that I feel is an obsolete emotion, and it is fear of lack and money that is perpetuated by a few who would stand to gain if that is the case. And so our media broadcasts very dire news about finances. But the point is that the mother herself has on numerous occasions stepped in to uphold the economies of the world, especially those of the major countries. She has done this that the transition into the future age of mother's rule, which is a sacred age with the father by her side, will be done with grace and not through hardship. Through such hardship, energy is drained, and when energy is lost, so does consciousness wane.
Okay, but then what do we advise people who are sort of subject to the kind of, you know, ID viruses that are being spread in these times about the so-called, well, you know, it's called recession or things like that?
Disconnect from these information sources. Disconnect because they are creating a reality that should not be. Disconnect from your television then. Create something that will only allow you when you want to watch your sports to do that. But disconnect from the internet news, because you are creating tomorrow. Focus instead on the abundance of your moments. It's the way that Alcoholics Anonymous help their people overcome the wanting to fulfill because they feel deprived in some way. They ask people to look at, do you have everything this moment to be well and happy and healthy? And the answer is invariably yes. This moment is all we have. Then focus on it with joy.
Okay, well said. If I may go on to the next question, which
yes.
is...
And of course we may just tell them that the nausea is a very good sign that you are where there's opposite energy and opposite matter. Really become attuned to it, because this has become very heightened in the last months. It's telling you that opposite matter and energy is in your presence, and you may want to get out of there if you can.
And how do we qualify terms like matter and energy in this, or opposite matter and energy for that?
Well, we might be in a meeting with business people, and we may be totally nauseated. Our energy might be that we want to create mutual benefit. Their energy might be that they want to take us for a ride. The nausea will absolutely indicate that.
Okay, well, interestingly, we had a question about that actually much later on, but which is, if I find that someone repels me, does that mean I should simply be more compassionate and embracing? Would probably be the opposite. You should probably just get out of there, but what would you say?
Well, here's the thing, that's the old way of compassion, and fortunately, we don't need to be martyrs anymore. In August of 2006, which is a date we mention often because of how dramatically life changed when those poles in the cosmos reversed, up until that time, it was the compassionate thing to hang around those of undeveloped light, whether they are family members or whatever. Now, I am not advocating walking away from minor children. where we have a fiduciary responsibility, but I am advocating that we get a job that is exciting to us, one with a path of heart, and to trust that our being is our sustenance. We don't need to hang on, hang in there, you know, stay longer than we need to when we feel the repelling. Because now, opposite matter and energies are repelling. Up until August, they did not. So up until August, light workers found themselves in the midst of deceit and dysfunctionality. Now, light worker babies are attracted into light worker families because the same matter attracts. Opposite light and love attracts. So if we are now in a situation with those around us of same energy where we feel good and free, those of same frequency, those of same matter, our frequencies of joy and passion and love that this will evoke will automatically go to the most loveless, lightless places on earth, because the frequency and the light will gravitate towards this opposite. We don't physically and energetically need to do that anymore.
Okay, so and that would mean that we would tend to be encountering more kindred spirits now, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Isn't that wonderful?
It is.
The correct partners are going to be drawn in.
Mm-hmm.
Years of loneliness for many people will end. And for some of those light workers, some of your partners are coming from the inner earth, which is an event that is to take place. I don't know when, because when I ask time periods, I don't get very good answers because time as a reality has ceased to exist. But in the next few years, say, there is high hope that that's the time that some of these beings from the inner earth who live in mastery are going to make it to the outer, and many of our partners are there.
Okay. And it's actually, as a side note, is it possible for people to sort of by themselves make contact with inner earth beings?
Yes. It is not as easy as it is, say, to contact one of the beings on the outer earth, like a fairy or an angel or so on. It's more difficult because of the intense shielding that there has been. The inner earth is the equivalent of our etheric body on earth, and we are its physical body. But it is absolutely possible. We have often had discussions either with the masters in the classes or myself with people from the inner earth. Often, and in the Secrets of the Hidden Realms, we tell you who is there. There's, for instance, a group of Hebrew people, a group of German people, people that have come in from Atlantis, giants came in from Lemuria, and so forth.
All right.
So, yes, they can.
Okay, and, well, the same person who asked about the, you know, the repelling also asks, what's your understanding of certain teachings teach forgiveness as the key to spiritual evolution, and if that means we should forgive dysfunctional behavior?
Well, we should perhaps define forgiveness, because I have found a lot of actual forgiveness concepts to be rather dysfunctional because of how much it patronizes. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we see somebody as bad or guilty, but we're willing to overlook it. That's dysfunctional forgiveness.
Yeah.
Or we're willing to put up with it. That's even worse. Yeah, that's not even godly or saintly. That's just plain dysfunctional. What it does mean is that we can truly, truly see them for who they are in terms of expressing. Because so many light workers see people for who they are in terms of potential.
Right.
So the next thing then that they would do is they would take a look at what the person is really expressing, how self-serving they are, for example. they would then understand that those are the choices that that person made, that we wish them well, let them go on their own way. But understanding embraces those the person in compassion, because we understand why perhaps they're like that. They had a dysfunctional family they grew up amongst. They saw themselves as lonely individuals with nobody that gave them understanding and love, and so they start to grab from others. See them for what they are, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Assess if the difference between them and you is greater than is comfortable. Then find yourself someone where the beautiful emotions of life can come out, because this is your new form of compassion. The more you express them, the more there is to go to all the places in the world that needs them.
Okay, well, interesting.
I'm not sure I answered your question, did I?
Well, it's about the idea of forgiveness, and you know, and if dysfunctional behavior should be forgiven, and I think she's actually referring to the more sort of, you know, advanced notion of forgiveness, but then still the question is if it's the only key to spiritual evolution, really. Like the idea of forgiveness as seeing that there's nothing to forgive, really, you know. But
I have watched Mother, in terms of when we went through this ascension, I've watched her eliminate non-life-enhancing groups that preyed on others. Soul groups left en masse as the planet and then the cosmos behind it was pulled over an edge of space and started its ascension in February of 2005. I've watched Mother eliminate the dead wood, cut the anchors.
Right.
It has always been done with the utmost compassion, but with the absolute understanding that that is the most life-enhancing action to take for the whole.
Right.
That what she is cutting preys upon that, drains the energy, sucks from others that are trying to get up, and it's like moths around a lamppost that are so clustered that it, at the end of the day, that light can't shine. So it is done with mercy, with forgiveness in terms of that there is no negative judgment attached to it, only the complete acknowledgement in truth and clarity of what choices they have chosen to make and what they haven't.
Right. Okay. And I think what's interesting is that the same person also writes it towards the end that she finds she's often grossly overestimating people as well, not really seeing them for what they are and judging them to be better than they are.
Well, she must be a light worker. It is the common plague of light workers that we tend to think that others come from the level we do. The difference between people can be so unbelievably vast and yet go undetected, especially where there is the codependency, which usually lives out a specific triangle and has been the bane of existence. Most relationships have gone this way. Leg one is people become past masters at accessing the right front to put on in courtship, whether courtship is romantic, business-wise, friendship-wise, but they learn the right lingo. They learn how to speak that which you will appreciate, how to do that which will impress you. That's leg one. Leg two is because they do that, they now think that they can control you. Because, you know, I worked my fingers to the bone when you were growing up, now I expect you to go to college and do what I want you to do. And if you don't, you know, my heart is broken. Emotional blackmail, or I'm enraged and I cut you off. So there's this triangle, and the third leg is always that you just cannot believe how people would not let you love them, you know, which means really to most people control them.
Sure.
And so you are enraged and you are hurt. And it's like a raw blister that gets, you know, most people have blow-ups at the end of every relationship. because we're in leg three. And so, you know, the problem is people put on a good front, especially when they're in this codependent triangle, which desires to control and manipulate others, because generally they don't even know who they are. They're not home for themselves. They don't live from authentic core emotions. And so how can you know who they are when they don't even know it themselves? They are whatever they want you to see until the time comes for them to pull the strings.
Right. Interesting. Do we have time for another question?
Well, you know what? I think we're overdue with our break. Let's go ahead and take a quick one. Thanks for reminding me.
Okay.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. What an amazing world we live in. And we have this day and on our other shows compiled for you a list of questions that others have asked. Many, many hours a day are spent living between the worlds for me, and has been for many years. So my beloved light family, it is with joy that I share these insights with you. Ruchir, thank you for joining us, and please, if you can, give us the next question.
All right, the next question is, what are awareness particles and what are neutrinos, or are they the same thing?
All right. Awareness particles. For eons, Toltec seers, which is a form of mysticism studying the nature of reality, found that awareness moved in spirals that arced and that slightly curved. So it was in August, at the beginning of August of 2006, that a massive change occurred in the cosmos when these spirals of awareness, which made growth linear, shattered into trillions and trillions of tiny little bits. Now, the awareness particles that shattered into bits are mostly masculine, because the masculine was dominant in the previous cycles of ascension and descension, and especially during the descension when those spirals formed. So the light component of the awareness particle, if you dissect it, looks like a wobbly cross. And the vertical one is light, and the horizontal one is frequency or feminine. And so the light was the most dominant in those bits that shattered. The mother herself continually produces another form of awareness. And it's very similar to those tiny bits in that they're small particles. In Revelations, they're called the living waters that are emitted from the throne, and they call it of God, but it's the goddess herself produces them. So the point is that, and I don't think that the Father produces them, but he produces, you know, what he produces, I'm not entirely sure of. I know that the Mother produces them. In that instance, the particles are more feminine in nature. The awareness in it is stronger in its frequency section than its light section. So, to summarize thus far, we have two bits of waves, little tiny fragments of waves that roll upon themselves to become atoms that are currently in the cosmos. There is a third type that is produced by masters when their minds are silenced. When their mind is silenced, the door opens in the pineal gland and in the heart. The heart cannot truly open while there is a dialogue in the head. When someone goes into God consciousness, if you will, when the dialogue is silenced, the heart bursts open. When this happened to me way back in the beginning of 2000, I cried and cried and cried because everything filled me with so much emotion because my heart burst open. When I went into Ascended Mastery, the dialogue silenced even deeper, even more. I didn't even have to come out of it, for instance, to do a radio show like this because the speaking is done automatically. The intonation pretends that thought is given to it simply so you don't sound like a robot, but there isn't. So at that point, a master produces a neutral awareness particle. And it is called a neutrino. And what it does, it's like neutrinos could clean up, for instance, radioactive waste. It will clean up anything that is aberrant, that is density, that is pollution of any kind. And it's produced by masters. It cleans up, for instance, what people think of as karma in those around them, so change happens through grace. That's one of the reasons students come to masters.
Okay, interesting. Or did you have more to say on the issue?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Next question is, I think it comes from, or is referring to the book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms, your book. And it asks about, well, what are the life forms within the infinite that you speak of, and if they still exist?
Okay, I'm not entirely sure what they're referring to.
Well, I wish I had the book here, but you mentioned
life
it briefly. Well, I can look it up, or I can go to the next one, and we refer to it back later.
Well, let me just explain what there is. There's, if you think of a life form, there are specific categories, and I can just name the category.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the cosmos is the designated ground, if you will, or space, though space is not exactly at this point the right term. It's the designated area where individuation takes place. How individuation takes place is that awareness clusters into individuation. A little bit the way a spider would spread glue across her spider web, but, you know, if she ran on that, she'd get stuck herself. So she plucks the strings of her spider web with her dainty little feet, and it clusters the glue into droplets. She then runs with her feet between these droplets, because they're very dainty little feet, so that she can get her moss that's got stuck on the outer edge of her web. In the same way, awareness is clustered into individuations. Before form takes place, individuation is similar to our inner child. For instance, your inner child is 5 years old. He's a little boy that's not outside of you or anywhere other than that he is a unique perspective of a little boy that's 5 years old. And so he brings wonderful gifts to your life of spontaneity and freshness and joy and laughter over little things. That's an inner child that's alive and well and trusts that he's safe to express. So like that inner child, we become a sub-personality, if you will, to the infinite within the cosmos. That means that we are a consciousness, a specific perspective superimposed over all that is. Now, that consciousness can cluster within itself. It can cluster into forms. Again, like the spider that plucks the strings and the glue makes droplets. But now there's a form we can actually see and relate to versus just a presence, if you will. Because like your inner child doesn't actually have a form. But you can now have forms within you. So that's the second type of creation and individuation that becomes a life form. Now, the life forms that lie outside the cosmos at this point, there are no other individuated life form cosmoses. We have incorporated them as part of the ascension that has taken place over the last few years. But outside of the cosmos, there are sacks of consciousness, mind that is active, not mind at rest. They're each an individuation, but they're just consciousness, and they are each one only of mother. The man is, for instance, you know, like Tom off the street, is not present there. So it's mother's individuations that lie like oceans of consciousness, each contained in a membrane, each at a different frequency level, etc., outside the cosmos, surrounding the cosmos. Now, they do not go on indefinitely. Beyond that is another phenomenon that is not differentiated the way they are differentiated life. It's mother's life, but it is nevertheless life. Out beyond them, when you reach millions of them, you finally get to the place, you know, which I had to enter for the first time in the first week in December of 2007. And you were here when I had to do it. And I mean, it was for me a very terrifying experience. And after 24 hours, I got through it. And then it was a very blissful experience. Beyond the oceans of consciousness lies undifferentiated mind. And mind at rest. There is no awareness there. There's just mind at rest. There is awareness in the oceans of consciousness.
And how would you describe this this mind at rest? I mean, the experience of it?
Utter and total bliss with not a single thought. Total silence. So, you know what? Could we take a quick little break and please hold that question and we will be right back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to the mystical world we live in, discovering the secrets of the hidden realms. My name is Almeen, and I am so happy that you can join us today. Rogier, thank you for your assistance, and please fire away with whatever questions you've got to make this as fun of an hour as we can.
All right. Well, we actually were still sort of halfway the previous question, which where you were about to describe the difference, I think, between mind at rest and, say, oceans of consciousness.
All right. The oceans of consciousness can, for instance, have a function. Mother can give them assignments. They are observing life. They are learning lessons. They have contracts with Mother to download these lessons, that if there is something that they see of life that she might want to know. So there is activity. There's an interactiveness. There's analytical skills. So mind is very much aware. In mind at rest, which goes on, you know, interminably after that, there is no function. There is just like someone that is in a total, blissful, undisturbed state of mind. But state of mind is not even the word, that is in this great peace and rest.
Like sleep or...
Yes, but see, there's mental activity during sleep.
Right.
Because I thought to describe it that way. But without the mental activity, mind at rest.
Okay. Let's see. The next question is also, I think, referring to Secrets of the Hidden Realms, but I think you will recall this one. It's about Arakana's gates and whether that's like the end. Are we supposed to see that as some kind of end to evolution, since it's like the last portal, or is it something else?
We're speaking of the gate of Arakana, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the gate of Arakana or Arakana, Arachne, is the direction of within. The direction of within holds tremendous secrets around it. It's the gate of transfiguration. is the gate where you leave one cycle of existence for another. And how it was described is that there are feminine archetypes within everyone's right brain, if you will, within right brain mind. The right brain and left brain have the goddess and god archetypes. The goddess Arachne has no counterpart to the masculine. It is neutral and primarily feminine, but nevertheless no counterpart. And when the balance has come and you live your highest truth for until so much light is contained that you cannot contain it any longer at the stage you're in, the gate of Arachne opens, and it is a process that actually occurs within the DNA strand, and it allows you to go to the next level. You know, there are deeper mysteries around it, but I've just actually uncovered them in the last 24 hours, and I don't know if I'm at liberty to speak them yet.
All right, then. Okay. Let's see. Next question is just a completely different theme again, asking about what is the function of the pyramids, and, you know, if Tov designed them, I mean, do they also have a nefarious purpose?
Tov designed the big pyramid, and Tov turned out to be very treacherous, having, you know, postured himself as a very benign beneficiary being to mankind. He was, in fact, not. He was incredibly dark and treacherous. I didn't know this. And I thought he was, quote, my friend for many years. The secrets of his double life that came out are written about in the records of the libraries of Isis. Mother herself has given accounts of it, and the history keepers of the planet gave accounts of his planning and scheming to control man, that is in the last half of The Gift of the Unicorns, and that section is entitled The History of the Cycles. So there are three lines through the dot. It is irrefutable that he used every means possible for egocentric gain, including black magic. Now, the pyramid was supposed to have been built at the time Thoth, who never incidentally was born into that family, but came into a family which was the ruling family on Earth at the time. It was the family of Isis and Osiris. The secret that I didn't translate, but I did read in the libraries of Isis, says that he didn't form the body. He simply bumped the baby that was born into that body. He killed the baby and came into the body, but at a later date, as an adult, not as a child. So that child grew up, and that he was bumped out of the body. Thoth walked in, repaired the body. But Thoth did, in fact, and the reason he did that is he hadn't earned the right to a body. So when Thoth was on Earth as part of the Anunnaki, for those of our listeners that are familiar with Zachariah Sitchin's works, he did not have the right to have a body because he was too dark. And so at that time, he, in actual fact, had to kill someone to take their body. But, be that as it may, at that time his name was Ningish Zida. He ostensibly built the pyramid as a guiding system, which the Mount Sinai area was one guiding system. He had the other point, and then there was one that was held in the Asian Peninsula by his aunt, Ninhursag. And so these three points became the beacon in which craft would use as they came in from the planet Nibiru. Now, Nibiru is in an elliptical orbit, according to our ancient Sumerian records, that come to the other side of Mars only every 3,600 years. So that's what he supposedly built it for. What it actually was built for, and it's different than the Sphinx, but it was built to travel between pages or cycles of the Book of Life. There are many time tunnels that have been on Earth. They mostly travel only within that specific cycle of life. He created a tunnel that could go between cycles of life. And in this way, he would feed himself information. You know, he would go back and forth to try and get his skins nailed down in order to keep down major light workers. So he did very many nefarious things that I won't bore you with. It's definitely, you know, the high points are written in the Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of Isis, as well as the Book of the Unicorns. But that is what he used it for. The Sphinx, on the other hand, had a harnessing device, an energy harnessing device. And it would harness the energy of those that came to Egypt, and multiple light workers have experienced drops in consciousness when they go to Egypt. That has now been fixed, but that was the case. And then he used it to keep himself alive even when the ascension began and the dark beings were being done away with. This energy harnessing device was one way in which he kept himself alive. Then he kept patterns of himself that would be recreated through this energy source. And this I only know because it was in the library of Isis where she warns about it. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmine experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer and in the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Elmine's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Elmine's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Elmine at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. Andrew here. We have just about enough time to wrap everything up, but thank you so very much for everything you've prepared. I very much appreciate it. I know it takes a lot of work for you, but it's very worth it for us. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And now to our listeners. There are so many things that lie behind the appearances of life. How is the best to approach it? Well, there are ways not to approach it. If we obsess about the questions, we lose energy. Losing energy drains consciousness. If we reject everything that does not conform to our ready-held belief systems. We are making the prison bars of our belief systems thicker and thicker. People tend to say they seek for truth, but then ignore or ridicule or attack that which does not conform to it. And then there is the thinking we know, thinking we have the truth, when from our perspective, the vast majority of life lies out there unknown and some of it unknowable. How then should we approach these mysteries? In closing, I would like to share it with you. Believe without believing. Know without knowing. Say to yourself, this could be true. Feel it through. Let your heart give it the ring of truth. And if you still don't know, ask the cosmos and then wait. Many signs in your environment speak to what is and what isn't. It will answer you. My beloved Light family, it is a great joy that you join us for this show and Windows into Eternity, Understanding Concepts of Ascension, which we have on Sunday nights at 8:55 p.m. Thank you very much for your presence. It is you that makes these shows possible. Andrew here, thank you again, and goodbye to you all.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mee. Please join us again next week.